Blog Talk Radio.
There was a time where it only had to taste good, or look good, for us to say.
Greetings, everyone. This is a Sound Health Option Show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. It is a wonderful day. We had an incredible breakthrough in our lab last week. We'll be talking about that in a minute, but glad to be with you on the show. This is going to be an exciting one. Everybody wants a partner. Everybody needs a partner. How to get one. How to keep from making lots of mistakes. That's what our guest is going to be talking about finding somebody to love. Lots of songs about that. Lost love, bad love, perfect love. So I'm anxious.
You brought up a whole entourage of songs in my head about love. It's a theme. Yep.
So it's great to be here. We should tell people that we are being sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health, and that's one of the announcements we're going to bring up because it's exciting. We do research here dealing with people's vocal frequencies and what that tells people about themselves. Those of you interested in Hillary's health, and that's all over the news this morning again, you can go to our In the News portion of our website, soundhealthoptions.com, In the News, and there's information about Hillary and Trump's health. So that's kind of exciting. We are simultaneously broadcasting Blog Talk Radio over there with Richard, audio only, and then on Sound Health Options, you can watch the show, go to radio, go to Blog Talk Radio, and there are links all over how you can get in touch with us. Another thing, we are also sponsored by the Perfect Mate Software, and that is under Software, Perfect Mate, How to Find Somebody to Love. And really the first part is how to find what kind of person you want, and not just to settle. So we're going to ask our guests about that. Is that all the announcements that we have to make, Richard?
I'll let everybody know that if you're, depending upon where you are, if you're over at WebEx or if you're here on Blog Talk Radio, that you can find everything at soundhealthoptions.com. Click on the radio tab and then click on, for today, Blog Talk Radio. On that page, there on the left or right-hand side, I always forget which, although it changes, is a link to get to the WebEx, where when we're doing vocal prints and Sherry's showing things over at WebEx, and there's quite an active chat over there. And then also there's a link to the Blog Talk Radio page, which you can either call and listen at 347-850-1407. And I do suggest to people that they sign up at Blog Talk Radio for free to listen to the shows or, you know, other shows. You can listen for free and sign up. And the nice thing about signing up is you get notifications if you follow other shows. You get notifications if you follow this show. You'll get a notification and, you know, notes that things are up and coming. You know, it's a good thing to sign up. And plus it looks, you know, helps score points for us at Blog Talk Radio when you sign up. So those are those. I think that's the only other announcement. I have other announcements, but those are the primary, I think.
I forgot a primary announcement that I have to make. We have an upcoming show, and this is not letting me move anything. There it is. Now people can see. We have an upcoming two-day workshop that includes the software, and it's going to be on muscles and muscle management, what your muscles need to be optimal. We're going to bring in inflammation and how to deal with that, fibromyalgia. So we are looking to set up a bioacoustic center in every community, and you may be able to take this workshop absolutely free, including the software. So please get in touch with us. Go to our site, Classes, and sign up under the 2-day technician workshop. Okay, Richard, back to you.
Okay. If you'll put up that first link about the Roundup, just because I can't help myself but talk about Roundup occasionally. So now a current or a new observation, I guess, I don't know that it's new, but it's finally being disclosed, that I love this phrase, and this is coming from EcoWatch, legal levels of Roundup. So that's legal levels. So that means as if they weren't using too, you know, if you're using too much, it'd be even worse. They've begun to show research that it's affecting the algae in streams, and algae in streams has a function. It does something. It's either a filter or it's an oxygenator or it's, you know, it does things actually in the body of water. And what they're finding out is that the part of the effect of the Roundup in the streams is that it's damaging the algae and also the things in Roundup. They also use surfactants, and surfactants break the surface tension of water and cause things to be slipperier. And in
one of the things Stephanie Seneff, who we've had on the show, says is that this also breaks down any kind of barrier between the gut and your belly and your brain and the rest of you. So if it's breaking down the surface of algae and getting in there, then think what it's doing to us.
Yeah, surface tension is something that can be not just in streams, it can be in surfaces, or, you know, we're just another microorganism walking around. We just think we're bigger, smarter, and no more than everybody else, but we're still just an organism. And so if the surface tension is affecting the algae in the water, it's probably doing something to the surface tension in our bodies. So there's that. And then if you put up the other announcement about the earthquake in Oklahoma, I think this one's particularly interesting because of it was a big earthquake, at least for Oklahoma. Being a Californian, I've been in 6.2, 6.7 earthquakes that have, you know, taken cities literally down here, parts of city. So, but it's a big quake. But the interesting thing about this is that they're actually talking about the Oklahoma Corporation Commission is telling operators to shut down 35 disposal wells. So we're talking about the fracking wells, wells where they you know, pump all these chemicals, 360 chemicals, into the earth and then draw them back out, again, using surfactants and other, you know, plus really seriously toxic things, and pressurizing earth, causing fracturing. Well, fracturing or fracking by these wells that are pressurized, Oklahoma, I forget what the number was, but it's an astronomical number. Oklahoma went from a not really an earthquake state to, I think last year they had like 300 or something. So this was big enough that it actually made the Oklahoma Commission say, okay, you've got to shut down these wells. So it's the first time we've seen that's actually stated it's been alluded to, it's been talked about, but this is actually saying, look, you have to shut down these wells. We're relating it to this. Stop now. 5.6 is a pretty serious quake, I tell you.
And I've put both of these links in the chat for everyone, and I'd like to call attention to a chat put in by Steve about a medicinal supplement summit that will be online September 12th through the 19th. That's pretty significant for our audience. 37 presenters discuss topics on choosing supplements and the pitfalls to avoid. That is a great thing. One little giant announcement. We have cracked the code of cortisol and how to turn cortisol into something inert. And I think most of us have this weight around our stomach, and I think that is cortisol caused. Now, when you turn around and find out that aspartame, MS, and the MSG both contribute to cortisol being more active than it should, that's pretty significant. So we have found the antidote. I don't know if we're going to be able to do that on our Tuesday show, Direction for Truth. Maybe I can sneak it in some way about what aspartame and MSG has done, and it's come into our society. Anyway, but that's going to be exciting for our Tuesday show. Let everybody know. And I think that's all of the announcements. And now we get to hear from our guest. Can you introduce our guest?
I'm happy to. This is going to be an adventure. Catherine Woodward Thomas is author of the national bestseller Calling in the One, a licensed marriage, family, and family therapist, and the author of the New York Times bestseller Conscious Uncoupling, 5 Steps to Living Happily Even After. She's an inspirational speaker and an internationally recognized relationship expert who's had the privilege of working with over 200,000 people in her virtual and in-person learning communities and has trained and certified hundreds of people as coaches of her highly transformative work. And today she's here to talk to us about relating. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning. So nice to be with you.
I have to right out of the gate. Go ahead, Sherry.
No, it's that question that you always ask, and this is just wonderful and timely because so many people are coming in here with, you know, I chose the wrong person, I don't know how to get out of it, he says I'm too fat. We've got all of these letters coming in about this show. It's more letters than we've ever received about any topic that we ever wanted to do. So great to have you with us.
Thank you, and I'm happy to take the questions. That's one of my favorite things to do, actually.
Wonderful. I have an opening question. I'm curious. I'm wondering, how did your journey open to this path of becoming a relationship expert? I mean, did this just happen one day, or has this always been a path for you of some sort?
Well, you know, I think many of us who become teachers or healers or, you know, therapists, we come because we ourselves were on that path on an individual level, on a personal level. So, you know, I like to say that I have an MFT, I'm a marriage family therapist, and I'm an author and all those things, you know, which, you know, people read as my credentials. But my real credential is that I've lived this and I do live it, and I kind of came at this profession from the inside out. And I think if you had told me probably, you know, 30 years ago that I was going to be a teacher of relationship, I would have laughed because I knew that I had a lot of gifts and talents, but relationship was definitely not one of them. And I had a lot of very difficult patterns and, in fact, was single up until I was in my early 40s. And by that time, I had always wanted a family, and I was sad, deeply sad, because I thought, it's just not going to happen for me in this lifetime. But the thing that turned it all around is I was fortunate enough to be a member of a group. And I think that we're all kind of learning now about the power of setting intentions in group. And this is almost 20 years ago, so people weren't really talking about the collective field or the you know, what happens, what opens up when we begin to really stand with and for each other. So I was a part of this community, and people were getting hip to setting intentions, and it was someone's good idea to get us together in a group and to set intentions together. And people started to have breakthroughs, but mostly like they doubled their income or they bought a house or they went on a trip or that kind of thing. But I had yet another failed love affair, so my heart was hurting. And I had a pattern of unavailable men, so like any size, shape, or form of an impossible love, and I was in. And so that obviously a lot of, you know, passion, but a lot of suffering and a lot of confusion. Like, here I am, I'm a good person. By that time, I was a psychotherapist. I'm not really sure, you know, why this is so hard for me. I know all my issues upside down, backwards, forwards. And still, I keep getting drawn into these impossible situations. So, but in a moment of either deep clarity or complete insanity, I called a friend from the group and I said, okay, I am going to set an intention to be engaged by my 42nd birthday. And she did not laugh at me. And in fact, she responded by saying one of the smartest, wisest things I'd ever heard. She said, Catherine, I will hold that intention with you and for you if you give me permission to hold you accountable to being the woman that you would need to be to be engaged by your 42nd birthday. And see, with those words, my friend turned my focus away from running out to try and find a partner to going within and to taking responsibility for identifying and releasing all of the invisible internal hidden barriers that I had built against love in my own heart. And I was not aware of them before this because I wanted a relationship so much. It didn't occur to me that there were parts of me that were kind of hell-bent on not having one. So that started an inner journey, which eventually created a miracle for myself. And, you know, it's a pretty sweet story, but the nutshell, I tell it in the book, I go into it in detail. But the upshot of it is that I ended up pretty magically reconnecting with a man that I had not seen in, or, you know, I dated like 6 years before and had for years thought of as the one that got away. And we reconnected, and I knew, you know, within a relatively short period of time that this was the man I was going to marry, and we were engaged 2 months ahead of my deadline and married the next year, and then I gave birth to our daughter when I was 43. And so when I created that miracle for myself, I thought, wow, how can I duplicate this? What did I just do to create that breakthrough? And I saw that there was steps that I had taken that were extremely specific and could be duplicated. And the rest is kind of history, because I went on to write a national bestseller about it. And now I've had the privilege of teaching hundreds of thousands of people. And I have success stories from all over the world, which I'm so excited about. So that's how Calling in the One was born.
I think it's an incredible perception of your friend to be able to say, let's start with you, because some of the letters that we have gotten are about the person not feeling lovable, not knowing how to get there. So that's going to be a great topic for today. There's another thing I'd like to read, the dedication in your book, because I think it's funny. To my beloved husband, Mark, and our beautiful daughter, Alexandra, the fruits of my labor. For a mother, I mean, that's
double meaning there, right? The fruits of my labor.
Yeah. That just told me this book is going to be chock full of not only good information, but it's going to be done in a humorous way. So just wanted to tell you that I love that piece of it.
Oh, thanks, Sherry. Thank you.
How do we start with finding self? That's probably the question Richard's asking anyway.
Was that your question too, Richard?
It's close. It's in the category.
Okay. Well, I think that, you know, the natural thing when we have serial disappointments in our love life or the absence of a love life for a long period of time is to start to try and figure out why. Why is this happening? Why do other people seem to be having love, you know, and I don't? And I think it's very, you know, organic to go to, well, you know, men are this or women are that, or I'm too, you know, powerful. Men don't like powerful women, or, you know, man, I'm too broke. You know, I don't have enough money. Women are looking for a guy to buy them a house, you know, or whatever the stories are. And, you know, and I'm always fascinated by the merits of culture, these stories as it relates to a culture that's moving, and you know we are shifting roles right now, and there are a lot of things that are interesting in the dynamics between men and women, or even women and women and men, because now, you know, thank goodness we have a larger playing field and we're not so rigid in our concepts of life partner. However, usually those conversations will end with some kind of conclusion that does not give us any access to power. Well, see, you know, I'm not tall enough, and that's just what's so, and so this is my lot in life, or all the good ones are taken, and it's just slim pickings out here, and there's nobody really left for me. So there's like a conclusion that it gives us no access to power. What calling in the one is instead of looking to try and figure it out by looking at the external reasons, it turns a mirror on ourselves, and it says, look, we are powerful beings. We are constantly creating our lives. We're creating our lives through our assumptions, through our habitual ways of relating, through the choices that we're making, the actions that we're taking, the words that we're speaking. And I think probably, you know, our listeners here is a pretty savvy, sophisticated audience in terms of really starting to understand how consciousness precedes matter, that our consciousness is actually out-picturing as the story that we are living with. And so what calling in the one is going within to discover and release all of the inner barriers that we have built against love, that we have really been outside of conscious awareness. Carl Jung once said that that which remains unconscious will appear in our lives as fate. So if we have certain resentments where we're still festering with victimization, if we have beliefs about ourselves where we have almost a core sense of self that we're on our own in this lifetime, if we have an old agreement, I'll never be happier in love than my mother, or my sister is the beautiful one and I'm the smart one, or an agreement we make to ourselves, I'll never let myself get hurt that way again. All of these things are actually instructing life. Don't bring love that way. Or if love comes in, we will find a way covertly outside of conscious awareness to sabotage it. We'll communicate covertly to the other person that we're not worthy of their love, or we'll just slip into an unconscious pattern that somehow will make that relationship unsustainable. So calling in the one is about making all of those things conscious, and the moment we do that, choice is restored. And we get to see, oh, I've been in this story, or I've been keeping this agreement, or I've been in this place of like a loss of power where I'm just victimized and not seeing how I could take responsibility for what happened in a way that would assure me in my own heart that I'm not going to make that mistake again. Once we see all those things, then we get to say, do I want to keep doing that? And what would I want to do instead? And that's where we begin to line up our consciousness with the future that we're committed to creating. And what happens in the calling in the one process is that people, and the book is written as a 49-day course. It came out in 2004. I've been since teaching people online, and I've really grown the work to be much more specific and even deeper than it was in 2004, because it's, you know, all learning is a moving train. Nothing is fixed. So it's growing and it's deepening as we collectively are ready for that learning. But what I find is that when people do the program, what they end up saying at the end is like, oh, I get it. Calling in the one is about calling in me. Because now I'm a whole person and I'm not coming from wound and I'm not coming from lack and I'm not unconsciously setting myself up to duplicate old painful patterns that I had in my childhood. I'm here. I'm present. I'm strong. I'm in my adult center. I'm congruent within myself. I know what I want, and I'm magnetic to the fulfillment of that. So it's kind of a wonderful journey. I mean, people take the journey, and not only do they manifest their soulmate, they end up going back to school, or they adopt children, or they buy homes, or they move across the country, or they move to a new country. Like, really, they come alive. And that's the best place. We all know that in order to, you know, have you know, call in your best love, you need to be living your best life. And so calling in the one is really about both of those things.
Well, and I have a comment, and then I have a follow-up question. One of the things I really liked about the material I read was that it's a great combination for me of what I would call almost a recovery program, and I would put in parentheses recovering yourself,
yeah,
and then going into intention, because that's been a tricky arena. About we have the law of attraction and we have all these put it out there, but what about all the wherever you go, there you are. So you're taking yourself with you when you're putting that intention out there. So that's what I love about the material is the really getting to the who you are, engaging the loving yourself first, then putting it out there is so powerful. I think that's so cool.
Well, and you're pointing to something really, I think, important to the calling in the one process, because the process actually begins with setting an intention. And I think, you know, many of us know by now that there's a very big difference between I want something and I am intending to create this. It's like really stepping into your biggest game. And it's recognizing how powerful we are, and it's the willingness to take responsibility for our own consciousness the moment we say that, and who we're being, and hold ourselves accountable for being who we'd need to be in order to manifest that intention. So it begins with intention, and then we start to create from the future backwards. And many of us are trying to figure out our love lives from the past forwards. You know, we're kind of like digging in the sandbox of old wounds and my parents' marriage and, you know, what happened between my dad and I or my sister and I when I was five. And I'm a therapist, so I'm not poo-pooing the necessity for being conscious and doing our work. But what I'm saying is that there's something really extraordinary to actually saying, I'm going to source this from the future backwards rather than the past forwards, because when it's from the past, what we're looking to do is we're preoccupied with healing. And I think that certain things happen truthfully, Richard, where healing is going to be a lifelong process. If we had a deep hurt in our heart, or we had a mother who couldn't be there for us or was rejecting, or we had a father who passed away when we were young, or, you know, some big heart hurt, that's something that we will be healing forever in our lifetimes. And it will come up, it's like, you know, there's a cyclical nature to those kinds of things. We can become at peace, we can accept, we can make something beautiful of it, but, you know, there's always that journey. Calling in the One is about healing, but it's also about development. Because many of the reasons why we do not yet have the love that we are wanting in our lives is because we have not yet become the people we would need to be in order to attract and sustain that love. So, in other words, if your vision is to have an empowered partner who is deeply present, who listens to what you share, who organizes around your feelings and your needs in a way that is kind and caring, who has your back and there's trust in the relationship, there are skills to creating and sustaining that. Skills like, I need to even know what I feel and need in order to make those transparent so someone can take care of my feelings and needs, or I need to know how to communicate you know, my true thoughts about something in a way that's not an attack, or I need to know how to set boundaries that are going to protect the health and the vitality of that relationship, or I need to know how to really listen to someone. I need to know how to solve conflicts. So what happens when we have these traumas in our past is that the development that we would need in order to have really healthy, happy love is thwarted or stunted. So, for example, if you live in a home where you're with like a narcissistic mother who's, you know, who's punishing if you have a thought or feeling on your own, then you would never learn how to bring forth your feelings and needs and share those with another person in a way that has them really get you and be able to accommodate your feelings and needs, because you would form a belief that other people don't actually care about my feelings and needs. Now, where that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy is that if you don't actually tell people what you feel and what you need, they can't take care of your feelings and needs. And that's where we become the source of our own experience, where life is happening through us as opposed to us. And it just looks like other people don't really care about my needs, because maybe there's a fantasy like if someone really loves me, they would just know. Right? So we really are perpetuating these stories through the lens of our own consciousness and how we're interpreting what's happening, how we're responding. And we almost can't do it differently until we identify what's missing in our skills in how to have happy, healthy love that will graduate us. And so I have in one of the weeks that we have in the program is I call it like a transformation of your core love identity. And those are all of our core beliefs about love. And usually they come like a matrix. You know, I think we're all kind of hip to, oh, yeah, I have this belief I'm not good enough, or that I'm kind of on my own in life. But if you really unpack a belief that is like the core sense of self that was formed in childhood as it relates to who I am in loving relationships, well, you know, I am a person that's fundamentally alone here. And then there, you begin to see there's also a corresponding belief about others and a corresponding belief about life and how it, whether or not life is supporting you to have love, or if life is indifferent or even punishing, right? So the I'm alone might have a matrix of belief like I'm all alone in this world, everyone always leaves me, and I can never get my core needs met. And so we want to start to identify that and then see how old was that self that made up that story, because that's the story that we'll go back into energetically in our own consciousness whenever we have a disappointment. And when we're in that story, we almost can't help but create evidence for that story. So we're stuck, and that's why people feel hopeless and resigned, like, I'm never going to find love, because it's like in that story there is no hope. So we make all of that conscious, and then we go back to the story, like, is it really true that you are the one person on this planet that was made to be alone? God made the mountains, God made the sun, and God made you to be alone. Well, no, that was the interpretation of a three-year-old or a four-year-old. And what's really true? And so we start this journey of being able to embrace, like, the deeper truth. I was not born to be alone. I came here to love and be loved, and I have the power to grow myself capable of creating healthy, happy, long-term love. And then we begin a journey, and we just say, well, you know, in that home where nobody talked to you and everybody ignored you and nobody taught you how to work out a conflict, you never learned this. So let's see. There's like, oh, I see. There's three things that are missing that you need to learn how to do. And let's just take on those three things, because once you learn those three things, or as you're even learning, the moment you decipher what they are, you can begin to create a different experience. And that's where possibility then opens wide, and the world becomes our oyster, and we are restored back to our power of what we really do have the power to create. And we recognize that the past does not determine what's possible in our future. The future that we're standing to create will determine what's possible for us in love, because that future, if we begin to lean into who would I need to be in order to fulfill upon that future, it will grab us by the chest and pull us forward with such force and momentum that we will become unrecognizable to ourselves and to others very soon.
One of our letters fits right into this. And I'm sure you've heard everything, and this one is a little out there on the edge. It's very long, so I'm going to try to summarize it. We're both in our 30s. Our relationship was great in the beginning. I weigh 223 pounds. That's only 24 pounds more than when we met. He won't make love to me because he says I'm too fat, but insists that I service him. I feel so alone, so deserted.
That is so painful, and I'm so happy that you brought that here. So, first of all, I want to encourage you to spend some time thinking about the relationship that you desire to create. So that's going to require you to recognize that the pain of this relationship is bringing up all of those things that you know you do not want, that are deeply painful and are pointing you in the direction of taking a stand for your life. Like, what you're upset about, you should be upset about, because underneath the upset is the recognition that I have the right to be loved. I have the right to be loved. Even when I gain 24 pounds, I have the right to be loved. I am worthy of deep love. I am worthy of respect. And so there's a punishment that's going on, and so you want to imagine to the best of your ability what it will be like to be with a partner who meets you halfway, who's there for you, who loves you whether you're up 24 pounds or down 24 pounds, because they're catching the essence of you, who is wanting you to be happy, who is extending themselves to make sure that they're participating in creating happiness for you, who is able to listen to you with a soft and an open heart and adjust their behavior because they care about your feelings and they care about your needs. Because that's not too much to want. That's actually called healthy love. And so as crazy as it seems and as far out of your reach as it seems, you can set an intention. This shall be so. And then you want to begin to align your consciousness with that future. And it begins with not trying to change him, but by looking within yourself to see how all of the ways that he's punishing and stingy and critical are actually just mirroring how you are punishing yourself, how you are being stingy to yourself, and how you are being critical with yourself. So you want to look at him and the way he's being as information about what you need to transform in your relationship with yourself. And so there's a journey on self-love that we're looking at. And the first thing on self-love is for you to notice how you speak to yourself, what your inner dialogue is. Do you have an inner dialogue that is harsh and punitive and angry towards yourself, stingy with your own love towards yourself? Or do you listen to yourself with deep patience and kindness? Do you help yourself to make empowered meaning out of what's happening? Do you have an investment in your own success? Do you prioritize taking care of your own feelings and your own needs? And that's where I would encourage you to begin. Because obviously you and your partner love each other. That's why you came together. And whether or not the two of you can find your way to a happier place, or that relationship ends up coming to a conclusion and you create another relationship, you need to start the transformation with you. And where you want to go is to, even though he is being hurtful, and he is, can we validate that? That's incredibly hurtful, bad, wrong, shame on him, not okay, but we can't start there, because you want to take responsibility for how you allowed that into your life, for all the ways that you've been communicating that it's okay to not take care of your feelings and needs, that you deserve to be punished, because that's where you have access to power. And when you shift, he will shift. And whether it be him or someone else, we're holding the high watch for you.
Thank you. I'm sure she thanks you a lot. Is this the kind of thing that you address in your workshops and books?
Absolutely. This is exactly the calling in the one process, love from the inside out. And a lot of people who are in relationships do take the program because they're in a very stuck place. They're not happy in the relationship. They're not at a place where there's clarity about leaving. And so, you know, the principles that we're teaching and calling in the one are highly transformative, and they do transform relationships and get people unstuck. And I've had a lot of people, you know, really have breakthroughs in their marriages and their long-term relationships by doing the program.
I want to step back ever so slightly. I'll include this phrase right before I ask this question. This is something I read in your materials that I thought was so powerful, is the leaning into self-responsibility. So let's all have that as a phrase up there on the chalkboard for a moment. And then I want to ask the question about, we hear a lot about communications. A name that comes to mind is, you know, the John Gray Mars versus, well, not, he doesn't say versus, Mars versus Venus kind of communications. But we don't hear that much about what you're talking about is the communication to self.
Yeah.
Which I think is so incredibly powerful, which, as I say, goes so well to that phrase of leaning into self-responsibility. I'm not saying other people aren't inappropriate, is the word I'll use, but really coming back to this, like, what's the communication to self? Can you talk more about that?
Oh, that's a great question. So let me just start by this leaning into self-responsibility. One of the inner obstacles to love that many of us struggle with are resentments, and particularly resentments towards a love that has hurt us or disappointed us, lied to us, you know, failed to fulfill upon their promises. And we're kind of left with the residue of that incompletion in a way that leaves us feeling kind of wounded or hurt or just still victimized. And you know that that's going on for you when you find yourself, like, you know, driving on the freeway, telling that person off even though you haven't seen them in 6 months or 6 years, and you're still, like, festering with it. So one of the things we look at is anywhere that we're still victimized and in reaction, where we're giving someone essentially with a lesser consciousness the power to determine how we're going to be and what's possible for ourselves, for our lives. So the one of the things I say is, even if somebody was, like, really 97% wrong, they really did something egregious and horrible, where we want to turn our attention is to the 3%. We really want to look at that 3%. Why? Because unless you can take responsibility for the ways that you covertly colluded in your own demise, gave someone permission to treat you poorly, turned away from your own deeper knowing, failed to ask the right questions because you wanted to be nice or polite or you didn't want to rock the boat, all the ways that, you know, we have of kind of covertly throwing ourselves under the bus or putting ourselves in harm's way, until we see that 3% and can take responsibility for it, we won't know how to move forward in a way that assures us we won't ever make that mistake again. So in other words, we won't trust love because we won't really trust ourselves. And we'll know that we're liable to get hurt again. And that's where a lot of people close down their hearts. So that piece of self-responsibility. Now, if we have a toxic relationship to ourselves, if we have a way of speaking to ourselves that's hypercritical or shaming or blaming, we won't be able to take responsibility for ourselves because shame and blame will actually stunt development. Shame and blame will sound something like, what is wrong with me? Why do I always mess things up? how come other people get to do this, but I'm so screwed up, I always manage to do this. Why doesn't anybody ever love me? Like, none of those shame-based questions are ever going to lead to emancipation and growth. All they can do is stay in the closed loop of that painful dynamic, so, and solidify it further. So what we want to do is to learn how to ask ourselves questions in a way that is loving and kind. And so I tend to tell people to stay away from why questions, like, why did I do that again? You know, that kind of, what's wrong with me? Why am I like this? Why questions tend to be a little shaming. The kinds of questions you want to ask yourself are like, okay, you know, what am I getting out of this? Or what is the other person mirroring back to me in my own relationship with myself that needs to be transformed? Or how did I set this person up to play out the wounds of my past? You know, where can I go for support on how to get through this? These are the kinds of questions that are going to actually foster development and graduation out of that pattern. And it's going to be able to help you to make, like, what have I been getting out of this? Well, actually, I see that I've been protecting my heart, and so I give mixed messages, and it creates a lack of safety, and then the other person is push-pull and, you know, giving me mixed messages right and left, and really what it's coming down to is that, you know, if I look at how was I the source of that, I'm protecting myself more than I am leaning in to find a loving solution with this person, that when there's a mistake made or something happens, I get triggered, I go right into being defensive, I'm done with the relationship, energetically I start signaling, it's time for you to go, you know, whatever primitive response I might have. We don't often look at how even the things that we don't say, just like who we're being, our energy, the covert ways that we're communicating, they create karma. They set in motion all sorts of dynamics. So once we can see what that is, we can begin to make an amends to ourselves. I'm never going to turn away from my own deeper knowing again. I am always going to take my own feelings and needs into account and stop martyring myself for another person. I will never overgive to anyone again to try and convince them that they should love me. You know, all these ways that we kind of hurt ourselves. So in one of the things that we do, we spend a whole week on learning these capacities and skills of self-love and how to actually become more connected to our own inner experience. Many of us don't even know what we feel and need. We're more, you know, we're more aware of the feelings and needs of others, and so our relationships are very codependent and very, you know, founded upon deep anxiety, and that's where people-pleasing comes in, or martyring ourselves, or self-abandonment, where a lot of us feel like we're afraid of being too close because we're going to lose ourselves in a relationship. That's all a lack of self-love. And so I'm not talking about, there's a difference between self-love and self-esteem and self-care. And sometimes we get confused. Self-care are the practices that would keep self-love vital, and self-esteem is something that is actually earned with our peers. Self-esteem grows when we see that we actually have an impact on other people and we learn to value ourselves in the community. But self-love is the foundational, unconditional, high regard that one has for themselves, even when they make mistakes, even when they screw up, even when they're imperfect, even when they gain 24 pounds. It's like this deep, underlying, fundamental sense of compassion and connection that we have with the essence of who we are that becomes the foundation of our relationships with others, because our relationships with others can never be better than our relationship with ourselves.
We have another audience question that fits right into this. It says, my long-term partner is still connected to his ex-wife. He spends holidays there. The kids are grown, but he still pays their bills and gives them money so that we're always behind and I'm paying more than my share. I finally let go. He moved out, but I still care. I just wanted to be first. Does your book speak about levels of forgiveness for this kind of situation?
Oh, that's such a painful situation. I'm so sorry that that happened for you. I can really hear. Absolutely, because look, this is the thing. Forgiving people for their bad behavior is not a one-time event. It's very often a decision that we make to turn our attention in a particular direction, and they need, and forgiveness will really need to be efforted. But this is a golden opportunity for you to begin to identify all of the ways that you failed to negotiate the relationship in a way that you could live with. And so if you look, you know, and this isn't to make you bad and wrong. I mean, obviously there's a pathology in that family, and, you know, goes into my next book, Conscious Uncoupling, The 5 Steps to Living Happily Even After, and in the 5th step of Conscious Uncoupling, I talk about how critical it is to make conscious the old agreements that relationships were founded upon and to renegotiate those agreements to be more appropriate to the future that people are committed to creating. And so those sounds like those agreements in that other family never got renegotiated in a way that actually left him set up to win in a new relationship. So what does that mean for you? Well, you want to look at all of the ways that you turned away from your own needs even early on in the relationship and what was motivating you to do that and the kind of permissiveness that you had about certain things and how you didn't negotiate things and how you kind of glossed over or minimized or turned away from the red flags, you know, all of those things, because that's your 3%. And the most important thing for you to do is to know that you can trust yourself to never make that same mistake again, and that the next time you open your heart and your life and your bed up to somebody, that it's clean and it's clear. And you're free to go the full Monty with that relationship because, you know, you've set up the foundation in a way that's going to allow you to be loved in the way that you need to be loved and deserve to be loved.
And I'm going to jump slightly sideways. Can you talk about, I saw this phrase pop up and it lit up for me, so that's why I'm asking the question. Love avoidance. What is that? How does it act out, I guess I'll ask.
You know, I'm fascinated with the dynamics of healthy attachment that's coming out now. And looking at what happy, healthy love is and what love and what the insecure attachment creates, the love addict kind of consciousness, and what love avoidant consciousness is. And we do start to touch on these in the program because it's all this new research, and that's what I mean when I say the program's growing, because there's so much research that's coming out on the necessity for healthy attachments, and which I'm so grateful for, because I think a lot of us think, oh, I should never need anybody to be happy, and they kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. But that's like, you know, those insatiable 3-year-old, 5-year-old needs, like, do you love me, but do you really love me, but do you love me more than her, but do you really love, like, that is draining on a relationship, right? Like, that is like the bottomless pit that makes everything, you know, hellish in a relationship. But the true needs of, you know, I need someone that I can count on, that who's taking my feelings and needs into account, who actually cares about what I need to be happy in this lifetime, who is who does what he says he's going to do. All of these, you know, these things that are healthy, that create beautiful relationships. So that's, you know, what cultivates happy, healthy love. And so this love avoidant, which I think statistically is, I'm trying to remember the number, it's probably about 20% of us are love avoidant, 20, 25%. And a lot of times love avoidant is kind of the inversion of love addiction, and the two of them will go hand in hand. That's where you have those push-pull dynamics, and you're going after someone until they turn around and come towards you, and then you suddenly become a love avoidant and do something to, you know, pick a fight, or, you know, do go sleep with somebody else, or do something to create craziness in the relationship. The foundation of love avoidance is has to do with a belief about others that other people are somehow toxic, dangerous, or going to take something from me. So if you have healthy attachment, the belief about others is that they're a source of nourishment and joy. And if you're a love avoidant, you're not so sure. You think that relationships are going to take something from you. And so there's a deep, there's a tendency to create intense passion and love and, you know, really kind of go for the gold. That's the heroine of love, is from love avoidance, love addiction kind of stuff, where you kind of go into the, you know, the bliss of the affair or some, you know, kind of vortex of heaven in love. But then it all falls apart the moment, you know, that you walk out the door, or, you know, something happens to pick a fight, or there's another person in there, there's like a third person to consider. So there's all sorts of, there's basically structures for the impossible love. And you can hear that, you know, from my story, is this kind of love addiction, love avoidant pattern that I had. And very often those of us with deep attachment wounds in our childhood will play out those dynamics in our adult relationships, and they're incredibly painful. So one of the things that I've been really developing in the Calling in the One work is really distinguishing the consciousness of happy, healthy love. And again, remember, we go back to that week three where we're doing all of that fundamental work in consciousness, and we are we're really getting people aligned with the foundational beliefs that would allow love to be healthy, finally, in our lives.
We have three or four audience questions I'm going to try to put together. Are there good and bad tips and hints that you could pass on to make a relationship better? And how do you know when it's over?
Okay. Good and bad tips. Well, a lot of the development that we engage in the Calling in the One process, and I guess that sounds kind of cumbersome. It's not. It's actually like, okay, this is how you do this, this is how you do this, this is how you do this. It's teaching self-love and self-responsibility in a way that sets relationships up to win. And so I think a very good habit is this capacity for self-reflection from a deeply self-respectful and self-honoring place, with the humility to tell the truth to yourself, because that's what's going to be like a number one core thing that's going to keep relationships healthy and going to allow you to engage whatever's happening in the relationship, so you don't have to just keep turning away from truth because there's so many defenses at play. A bad tip for relationship is, you know, I think some of our fantasies about love, if somebody loved me, they would just know what I'm feeling and needing, or, you know, even the happily ever after myth, which has kind of imprinted all of us that, you know, great relationships are just about finding the right person as opposed to being the right person. So we have some immature ideals about love that are kind of tempting us to not develop ourselves in a way that would allow the relationship to realize its full potentials. Because it's, you know, we all know you could meet the right person, but you could create hell with that person, or you can create heaven with that person. And that's really what we're bringing to the table. And the beginning of a relationship is just the decision to create something together. And what we create is going to be dependent upon the skills that we bring to the table and the intentions that we have, and how sophisticated we are in knowing, being emotionally literate, knowing what we're feeling and needing, understanding our own consciousness and our own filters through which we're interpreting and responding to whatever is happening. So those are, so we're all kind of on that learning curve, because life has given so many of us the desire for an extraordinary relationship, and really, really loving relationship, and where someone's our best friend and our soulmate and our, you know, our financial equal, or, you know, all of these things that we want, you know, our lover, you know, our perfect lover, all of these things that we want. But, you know, Calling in the One is saying it's not just about, you know, finding a great love, it's about being a great lover. And I obviously don't mean that in the physical sense alone, but, you know, really like being the love that we're looking for. And then how to know when to go. I'm an advocate of long-term love. I wrote Conscious Uncoupling for those who it is the right thing to part ways, and it becomes very clear because one or both people have just decided this, you know, this is the end, and so that there is a way to end a relationship that is wholesome and healthy and isn't going to do a tremendous amount of damage. But that's the end of the road, and I'm an advocate for relationships. I think that people should get support from a third person before they decide to throw in the towel. And you know, a lot of therapists will tell you that people come to marriage therapy too late very often, that they wait too long, and there's already so much damage that's done. We have to put money in our emotional bank account in a relationship all the time. And I think, you know, John Gottman has shown us that it's five positive interactions to every one, you know, challenging interaction. And so relationships do require a lot of tending to and the building of a friendship. So before you, you know, go down too much, tolerating too much toxicity in the relationship, go get support, see if you can turn it all around. I think that the core thing that really breaks up relationships is when people's values change and the partners don't actually care about the values that are emerging in one partner. And we live at a time where people are growing and changing and developing very, very quickly. And they're moving from one value system to another. And what I mean by that is, like, the most important thing is my family, is one value system, to the most important thing is transforming the world. That's another value system. And so those foundational value systems, it's very hard on relationships when one partner is transforming and the other partner is not interested in the transformation. And I think that where people need to go when that's happening is to have a lot of patience with each other, to understand the values of each partner, and to try and to do their best to support and to get on board with supporting their partner to live inside that value system. And where people will, you know, very often wrestle and tussle back and forth in relationships will then be incompatible is if the partners don't care to stretch, to honor, to know, to learn the value system of another, and to value that that's what their partner's up to, and to really care enough to support that. And then, of course, you know, any kind of abuse, I think that goes without saying, right? You know, physical abuse or even verbal abuse, it's really destructive, and no one's willing to change that. I think that that is time to step back.
Yeah. And I know we're at the end of the show, but I still have to ask this question.
Okay.
I know it'll take us just a couple minutes long. How do we break the cycle of making stuff up, meaning having a reaction ready for an action that is yet to actually occur?
Isn't that a great question? My friend was sitting here at my dining room table the other day saying, you've got to talk about how people project and believe everything that they think and feel, and they're projecting all the time. Excuse me, onto other people, and everybody believes their thoughts and everybody believes their feelings. I think that's what we're talking about when we say get conscious of your own filters. Get conscious. And the more, and it's not that hard. It's been outside of conscious awareness. It's been nebulous. Maybe a lot of us have our, you know, we have a handle or pulse on our quote-unquote issues. But you really want to start to know, like, what am I assuming is true about myself? What am I assuming is true about the other person? You know, I learned about this, excuse me, once when I was with a friend and we were talking about beliefs about ourselves, and she had gotten to this conclusion that she had this deep feeling like she was invisible. And we were chatting about that, and I was standing in the kitchen and I got myself a glass of water as we were talking, and she turned to me and she said, well, I wanted a glass of water too, you know. And I was, like, shocked. I said, what was that? And she was shocked that she was so hostile. And she said, wow, you know, inside of invisibility, I just assume other people don't care about me. And she, and so she realized that she was talking to me through that filter. Now, because if she had a belief like other people actually really care about me, she might have just gently said, mate, would you get me a glass too? That looks good. So we have these filters, and we want to start to just become aware of them and conscious and start to have a sense of humor. And that's, you know, this is where you fill your partner in and you're both supporting each other to wake up out of the trance, so that rather than like two wounded children, we're full-fledged conscious adults having this wonderful, delicious, journey together where we're healing from the past and we're coming fully and radically alive to live our best lives, and that's what we're supporting in each other. And that is the future of love, and that's what we're all aspiring to.
Wow, that's a long bumper sticker, but that would be great. That is an awesome, that's great. That's just great.
Hmm.
That's a whole other show. That is so good. How do people find you? Do you still work with people one-on-one? Are you more so moving in the
groups? I train coaches, and I love working with the collective field because, remember, that's where we started, and that's what made such a huge difference for me. So I have created the point of entry that I want to share with everybody is I have a 90-minute workshop that's a free download, and I will literally take you through the four main obstacles to love. And you can see so much about what's been in the way for you. It's at callinginthe1.com. And at the end of that audio, callinginthe1.com, so it's just free for everybody. At the end of that audio, I also talk about a program that is a 49-day program that we do online where I have my coaches working with you. We have group coaching calls every week. I'm on coaching. I'm teaching live. It's a really great comprehensive program to take you through the process. That's at 49daystolove.com with the numbers 49, 49daystolove.com. But if you go to callinginthe1.com, that's free. It's 75 minutes of content, and then at the very end I'll tell you more about the 49 Days to Love course that we have coming up. But that's how I work with people because I found it to be most effective, actually. You know, a lot of times people, it's one thing to know your issues, and it's another thing to be able to have access the energy to have a breakthrough. And I'm a big believer in doing things with other people because we're all in it together, and we're feeding power and feeding energy to each other. And so I just find it the most effective way to work rather than one-on-one, so I'm not really doing the one-on-one anymore.
Well, and I think it's a powerful way to get your message out there. You're at a, I'll call it a level of play, where you want as many people to hear what you're saying as possible because it affects the field, the attention, and everything. So it's stupendously great. So that went faster than I thought it would, even though I know it was going to be fast. But that was really wonderful. Thank you so much, Catherine. That was
a
great show.
You're so welcome.
That was fun.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks, Sherry. Thanks to all the listeners who wrote in. That was really wonderful.
Yeah. Yes, thank you so much.
I think the audience write-in people were very brave, and I think you are incredibly brave to take on such a big topic. It was great.
Thanks, Sherry.
And I'll let everybody know. Oh, go ahead.
I just going to say we'll get this out to everyone so that they can listen to the show. Well, I'm looking for where they could find the show.
Well, the show will, while you're finding that spot, the Blog Talk Radio side of the show, the audio side of the show, will be available probably in about 15 to 20 minutes. And it'll be available somewhere on the site. I think if you go to soundhealthoptions.com and click on the radio tab, usually there's a player there somewhere. A player is a little stack, gray box, that has the last five shows we've done. And that'll be rendered there in about, as I say, 15 to 20 minutes. You can also find it at iTunes by searching for Sherry Edwards or Stitcher or any other number of podcast aggregators out there, and I suspect it's going to be a show that you're going to want to share with others, and that's why I like Stitcher, because it's really easy to find a show that you really want other friends to hear and to share it from there. They have really great built-in social media, so that's my favorite. But you'll be able to hear the audio and see the video probably by tomorrow, I'm guessing. Sherry usually has done with the pages that we've looked at and talked about. But that was really wonderful, Catherine. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you again, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Everybody have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll see you on Tuesday.